But I was quick and learned, that's not my job. I can't know everything in English. You know, I can't know. So I really began to adopt and accept a flow of knowledge of teaching. I mean, I respect today. I want the students to lead their own learning. I want the students to drive their learning. It doesn't mean, you know, I'm making excuse for my not knowing this thing, but it's really more recognizing students know a lot. Students can drive their learning. We are here to provide social and emotional support.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hi, Brad.
Hey there. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to be back. If you don't know, this is part two of a conversation with a legendary scholar, Yang Zhao. We're so excited that he's here with us again. If you didn't get a chance to listen to part one, you can catch that on our website, www.digitaltolearn.com, and that's a numerical two. You can also find additional resources on Twitter or on our LinkedIn profiles. But for now, we're going to jump right back into the show and welcome our guest, Yang Zhao. Welcome, Yang.
Thank you, Tiffany. It's great. You are wonderful. It's good to see you guys. I know maybe on the podcast, you won't be able to see Brad and Tiffany. I can tell you they are beautiful. They are wonderful and amazing.
Oh, this is a first. I like you.
Wow. I've never been referred to as beautiful before.
I know.
Well, all men are beautiful. That's the idea.
So you've referenced several times the pandemic, and for you, it made no difference because you are kind of hunkered down in that bunker of yours thinking. But if you think about the bigger picture of higher ed, what have been some of the positive and negative impacts of the pandemic?
Well, I think, you know, higher ed, by and large, truly as a big institution, has not sat down to think about that. I'm so happy to ask this question. I think higher education has been treating COVID-19 as an emergency. We have to deal with it. We had to deal with it. Now we're back. And many are wishing to say, let's get back to campus. So I think that's the question. If you analyze this, you know, first of all, I think the good is the bad. You know, for number one thing is that everybody has to teach online, for example. Mm-hmm. And that's good, because everybody had to experience this. And that's bad, because most people have not been preparing to teach that. So they delivered horrible experiences, right? However, when we go back, if we reflect on that, if all our international students are scattered around the globe, how are you going to do that? The global distribution of students. And that may make your university, my university, all universities to think about, what if we are global? What if we truly run global universities? And if we run that, can we cut down the cost? If you have students in Africa, what would that be? Or South America? And how do you collaborate with the local universities, local institutions? So that can go a long way to rethink about your student population. And another one is that, you know, I think we've gone through this COVID-19. And some students truly enjoyed remote learning, you know, hanging out in other places and allow them to do work and taking classes. Now, how can university engage in a different type of format of delivery? And of course, you know, I bet, you know, we also have schools that some professors truly enjoyed it, but some really hated it. And this is not a matter of choice, but then we can reflect on what can I do better? You know, what I can do better in delivering that. I think higher education is a critical time. Actually, right now, you will see schools closing if they don't change. You will see schools expanding because they are very smart that they're doing this. And you will see systems like tenure being affected, like in Kansas. You will see professors rethink about collaboration. You will see, again, at the globalization. But I think the key, Brad and Tiffany, is to invite higher education people to sit down and have a big discussion before they rush back to be the same as 2 years ago.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I've talked to so many colleagues and asked them the question, well, how did you like working at home? And the typical answer is, I never thought I'd say this, but I loved it. It was great.
Yeah.
Are there specific predictions that you have for the future of higher ed as we, well, we hope there's a pause and reflect, but then as we do move into the future, what do you think you're going to see?
Well, I think you will see, again, this doesn't apply because we got 4,000 universities, colleges in this country, many places. I think a lot of people will be thinking about credits. Mm-hmm. You know, think about micro-credentialing may become really big. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the Carnegie way of doing credits may not be necessary. You may have to rethink mm-hmm. about this. I think, even given the geopolitics, you know, right now, the big fights around different countries, this is quite nasty, but globalization is there. So how are you going to think about educating students without having them in Indianapolis? Mm-hmm. That's really mm-hmm. going to be a big question, but I don't think many people think, oh, we're just going to shrink and just serve our own state, but that's not going to be the case. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, how are you going to compete globally? I think on a global scheme, you will see a lot mm-hmm. of changes. And then, of course, you will see people rethink about research. You know, there are many research universities. And how do you conduct research when you have a lab, but you cannot have access to? And if you do, where do you get all the research assistants? How do you manage that? And how do you do that? That will be quite interesting. And another thing is that I just think about one possibility which might happen is our students, future college students, can take different courses from different institutions yeah. and form different credentials. That might happen. Or mm-hmm. businesses may say, okay, you know, you're going to work with us, but we can send you to, and we pay for any course. We don't pay for a degree from certain universities. We pay for different courses. I think it's mm-hmm. going to be, maybe people will rethink about higher education. Do you want to put a down payment of $200,000 for 4 years, and then mm-hmm. you're 22, you go to get a job? Or maybe you just want to work when you're like 18, and then you work, but you get a knowledge. You know, like I was reading an article, it says IBM says, you know, we're hiring people for their competences, not for their degrees.
So, you know, I think this theme has come through in several of your answers. As we come out of the pandemic, the tendency is to say, okay, that's over, let's move on. Let's go back to where we were. But instead saying, hey, let's take a minute here and let's think about what we've done over the last 16 months and what have we learned that we can take forward with us?
Correct, Brad, because I mean, 2022 is not 2020 for sure. Mm-hmm. Just imagine how much remote work we have now, how many people have experienced that. This was a very sad human moment, but it seems to be a necessary human moment. We mm-hmm. all had to experience it. But once mm-hmm. you experienced so much loss, so much disruption, you just want to return back. Even returning back, I would say, like Biden would have said, build back better, you know, or that's United Nations kind of idea. If you want to build a house that was burned, I hope you are not building the same house. And there's so much we have learned, good, bad, and also it exposed mm-hmm. many flaws of higher education. And mm-hmm. that should be reflected on. But I am very worried that our higher education school leaders, because of the emergency mindset, also because of the wishful thinking that it will go away, everything will return mm-hmm. to normal, that would mm-hmm. just go back to normal. Mm-hmm. And there's no normal. The normal is different.
I hear a lot of conversation about what higher ed administrators perhaps can and should be thinking about. And then also students and the choice that they have in pursuing courses versus degrees from one institution or here or there. For a faculty member, a current faculty member, or a prospective faculty member, it's a healthy mindset for them to have as we move into the future, because I imagine that all these changes can induce fear and uncertainty for them as well.
You know, again, beautiful question. Beautiful question. Anyway, so we have beautiful faculty member. I'm a faculty member. Brad also mentioned that people enjoyed it. So people hated it. Mm-hmm. I think when we talk about faculty member, it's a huge population. Mm-hmm. Somebody, you know, enjoyed remote. Some people didn't. Some people, you know, would rush to go to a bar to meet with people. You know, my view is this. First of all, you have to accept reality. Their reality is bad. right? I mean, if you look at it, the reality is not very good. And so as faculty member, you're doing research, you're doing teaching, you think about your life, you know. I think the important thing is to accept change and make the best of changes you experience. And also the best way, of course, is to lead changes. If you can lead the change, it'd be best. You know, this is a great context to be inventive, to be innovative, to lead and create changes. You know, we always say, you know, you want to drive changes. I love that one because when I first came to America, I learned if you are in a driver's seat, you never get car sick. So don't be a passenger.
I love it.
Be a driver of change. If you drive the change, others follow, it'll be easier. So I hope people can think about inventing, innovating, creating. You know how creativity can be very enjoyable. I know you guys, you're running this podcast because you enjoy it. It's fun. It's not because you have to do it. It's because you really want to do it. And today you can do a lot. So that's the mindset for any faculty member.
So as you think back for a moment, if you will, to your very first teaching experience and how you approached that task, compare that with what you know to do now. How has that changed?
I got to tell you, I started teaching English 1986 in China to college students. And I quickly learned a lesson that taught me today. So when I was teaching English, I was kind of thought I got to know everything about this. Book, you know, teaching English. So we were learning about a small story about this, the lions are still at large. Okay, at large. I didn't know, I was lazy. So I didn't check out what it meant. You know, I was kind of making up what at large meant in Chinese and taught students. And one student came to say, you know, it didn't really mean that. I said, yes, it was horrible to me. And because I wasn't the only authority anymore in the class, I was not the only knowledge source, but I was quickly learned, that's not my job. I can't know everything in English, you know, I can't know. So I really began to adopt and accept a flow of knowledge of teaching. I mean, I respect today, I want the students to lead their own learning. I want the students to drive their learning. It doesn't mean, you know, I'm making excuse for my not knowing this thing, but it's really more recognizing students know a lot. Students can drive their learning. We are here to provide social and emotional support.
It reminds me of times when you're teaching in a classroom and having a discussion with your students. And again, presumably you're the expert in the room, but a student makes an observation that you've never thought of before.
Yeah.
And what a grand moment that is. And quite often, faculty will tend to just let that go rather than celebrating that moment and saying to that student, I've never thought of that before. That is genius.
Yes, that's what I learned. So I was fortunate to have that student. I mean, of course, you know, you could react in different ways, but that was very important to me.
That is excellent.
Yeah.
One of the first things we noticed about you was your extensive list of publications, books keep coming out of you left and right. Now we know why, because you're in that bunker of yours, but there must be a process that you use to think about new topics to explore, new ways to communicate those topics. What's your process?
You know, that's actually, again, a beautiful question, because I think for faculty members, many seem to have a hard time doing writings, doing research. You know, for PhD students, I have a lot of PhD students. They seem to have a hard time. I think an important thing is to care about your own life, to care about your observation, to care about your journey. When I want to write a book, it's really, or an article, because either I am really angry or I am care too much about this topic, be mistaken, or because I just want to know something. If I don't know something, I write a book. Writing a book is a great way to learn.
Absolutely right.
If you don't know something, write a book. You know, the other thing I have to tell you is that I don't really spend a lot of time promoting my books. It's out there. I don't think a lot of people read books anyway. So writing is a way of learning for me.
Wow.
And, you know, it's out there. But really, we know today, many people don't read books. That's why I love podcasting. I love doing webinars. But without writing, you won't be able to think clearly about an idea. So if you write a book, you really get yourself deep into the literature, into research. You really understand the various aspects, the various perspectives. Mm-hmm. So that's why I write books. I write books to understand something. And then I can share it with people in other formats.
That is a wonderful insight. We work a lot with faculty around the topic of scholarship. And very often you'll hear them say, well, I don't really want to put the effort into this because it may never be published. And I think your perspective on this of, okay, maybe it won't be published, but look at all the things that I've learned in the process.
Right. Well, that goes back to the same idea, Brad, and you were talking about as a teacher. You know, let's not pretend, you know, once you get your PhD in the classroom, you are the ultimate authority. We are all learners. You know, we keep using the term lifelong learning. How do you do lifelong learning? Mm-hmm. You know, in your teaching, you run into a problem. Maybe some of your friends have a problem. I said, you know, that really interests me. I really want to know. You know, I want to see what's going on. So you dive in, you do this literature review, you talk to people, and that's how you help yourself thinking and growing. And you do something to grow, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now, we don't have to worry about this because we have millions of listeners, literally millions. But Brad and I have often shared that if this podcast had no listeners other than us, it would still be 100% worthwhile for the learning that we gain from speaking with individuals like you. Just makes us better. So it kind of translated for me into the podcast world as well. Certainly worthwhile just to encourage us to be lifelong learners.
Yeah, that's really why I write. I mean, I enjoy it. You know, people have different ways of improving. You do your podcast, some people are doing writings. Some people have conversations, but you know, big ideas requires you to spend some time, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if I had to summarize this podcast today, and I'm going to try to think of one word that I would use to describe this experience with Yang, that word would have to be, drum roll.
Beautiful. It was. So good.
You have been inspiring today, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. That's enjoyable. You guys are wonderful hosts. You guys do a beautiful show again. Beautiful. Wonderful. Okay. I got to switch the word now.
Yeah.
We'll take all of that.
By the end here, I can sense that we're getting in our heads with ideas and reflections. I can look over at Brad and know that he's reflecting, and I'm in a reflective space too about how I spend my own time, what my lifelong learning looks like. New ideas for our team in the Indianapolis area at our institution. Thank you. Thank you for the impact you've had on us and for all the listeners that we have out there.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. You know, this is one of the best podcasts I've had because you two ask good questions. You know, I'm going back to my bunker to eat my red meat.
Woohoo! We will do the same in our situation and think of you.
Well, you're in Indianapolis. You can meet West people. You got to do that. Okay.
Right? We have it on hand. Yeah.
All right.
The fridge, the freezer.
Yes.
We got it.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you guys so much.
And to all of our listeners, we will have additional resources for this podcast with Yang Zhao on our website, www.digitaltolearn.com with a numerical 2.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are 3 things we ask you to do. 1, come back and join us again. 2, tell your friends about us. And 3, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.